I'm Tom Rowe in Akron. You've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and we have a busy show for you today. We're going to hear some legal explanations about what migrants seeking asylum in the United States and being forced into the Hudson Valley, what their legal options are. We're also going to hear about the latest efforts to create better packaging that reduces its climate impact, with several laws in Albany under proposal as the legislature comes to an end later this week. We'll also hear some local stories and phone calls, and we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service on the local better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after the local news on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
We're a thousand miles from comfort. We could travel land and sea. But as long as you are with me, there's no place I'd rather be.
Hey, it's Gracie,
Sarah,
and Josie
from the Girl Scout Troop 1819, Coxsackie, Athens.
And you're listening to
WGXC
ACRA
at 90.7 FM.
Keep on being you.
Wave Farms Public Art Park begins opening Saturdays on June 3rd for drop-in visits anytime between noon and 6 p.m. The art park is on Wave Farms' 29-acre campus in Accra, featuring 13 installations. The study center, including a research library, the WGXC 90.7 FM Acre broadcast studio, and accommodations for Wave Farms International Artist Residency Program. Visitors to Wave Farms Art Park receive a guided tour of the campus. Admission is free, and tours typically last between 60 and 90 minutes. The art park is available to see on other days through October through reservations at wavefarm.org.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-eyes into here's how you cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465. For more information, Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Carol McCrossin of Washingtonville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC Daily News for Tuesday, June 6th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Patrick Tyne reports in the Times Union that New York's Departments of Health and Environmental Conservation issued a warning for June 6th for the Capital Region and the entire Hudson Valley because of air quality designated as, quote, unhealthy for sensitive groups, unquote. There are high concentrations of fine particulate material in most air locally because of the wildfires in Canada. DEC warned in an advisory for all day Tuesday that outdoor exposure can irritate the eyes, noses, and throats and cause shortness of breath and exacerbate heart ailments and asthma. Young children and older people are at the most risk. There are also very dry conditions locally, and white balls of cottonwood fluff have been involved in at least two local wildfires this week. Anyone with breathing problems should stay indoors. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Melanie Lekasevic reports for Capital Region Independent Media that the Long Energy Company filed an Article 78 lawsuit May 26 in Albany County Supreme Court against the Town of Queens and Joint Planning Zoning Board of Appeals after their proposal to build a bulk fuel storage facility was turned down. Long Energy failed to get approval with a 3-3 vote from the Planning Zoning Board of Appeals. The company was attempting to build a bulk fuel storage facility on 5 acres on Route 101 with two 30,000-gallon fuel tanks. Attorney Beth Carey, general counsel for Long Energy, said, quote, "The goal is to have the court, because of the egregious behavior shown by the Planning Zoning Board and some of the members, to actually remand it for them to approve the project or, in the alternative, to give some more direction to make a decision," unquote. The lawsuit alleges the project saw roadblocks from the town because Robert Nolan, chair of the Planning Zoning Board of Appeals, owns a competing business in town. Quote, "This matter involves a brazen and concerted effort by a select group of Town of Queens officials who have systematically abused their authority and attempted to kill the project for the benefit of their own personal business and financial interests," unquote, the lawsuit alleges. Nolan did not respond to multiple requests to comment in the story. Queens Town Supervisor George McHugh was also named in the lawsuit and said, quote, "We are confident that the facts will establish that the planning board acted lawfully at all times during the review of this special use permit application," unquote. Read more about this story in the upstater.com. While there is a large local affordable housing problem, nothing big ever seems to happen to address the issue. But more small efforts are helping. And Heather Bellow reports for the Berkshire Eagle that a nonprofit has brought a downtown Great Barrington building to stabilize the rents of 6 units upstairs. Last week, the Community Development Corporation of South Berkshire bought the building for $1.6 million to keep the 6 workforce housing units. The William Pitt Sotheby's International Realty Company currently operates out of the 2 storefronts at street level in the building on Main Street. A statement from the Community Development Corporation said, quote, "With this purchase, the CDCSB plans to ensure that all current tenants receive the protection of an annual lease and complete the renovation of an unoccupied unit," unquote. The CDCSB's executive director, Carol Bosco Bauman, said, quote, "We hear from a lot of businesses through our Small Business Technical Assistance Program that a lack of workers is one of the biggest impediments to their economic growth and or stability, and owners who have hour-long commutes that exacerbate an already long day," unquote. While retaining the 6 apartments helps the large problem, the nonprofit will also open a 49-unit affordable housing complex later this month. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, June 6th. Local early morning temperatures range from 39 degrees in Stephentown to 60 degrees in Voorheesville. Regional average soil temperature is 61 degrees. The pollen scale ranges from 0 to 12, and we've been coming down slowly. We were at 10 over the weekend, and today dips under 9, so it's still kind of high, but there is a chance for a break in some of that suffering out there, especially later in the week, as you'll see. For today, we get some rain and humidity pulling down those pollen particles. Rain chances kick off at 7 a.m., then this afternoon, rain picks up a little and could bring the thunder. A high of 73 happens at 4 p.m. Overnight, temperatures dip to 49 degrees and light rain chances linger. Tomorrow, more chances of light rain all day with a high of 72 at 4 p.m. 49 again overnight takes us into a gloomy, cool, and rainy Thursday. High of 69. Friday, same deal, high of 69 with rain. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 4:57 a.m., low tide at 12:08 p.m., high tide once again at 5:42 p.m. The river temperature will be 71 degrees and the tide strength will be high. Sunset today will be at 8:13 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:16 a.m. Looking way up, we see the Hadouken that was released is still expected tomorrow night. X-class flare chances are at 10%. Plasma winds will be slow at 390 kilometers per second with a thin density of 2 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2.6. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 151, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Hi, folks. Before we begin taping today, I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Peter Jenks of the Federal Communications Commission. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Barris.
I don't know if any of you are aware of this, but it's a federal offense to make lascivious remarks on a television network broadcast. The penalty for this disgusting un-American behavior is 1 year in prison, or $10,000 fine, or both. Anyone making a sick, submersive remark tonight will be arrested immediately. I then will personally escort the offender to federal prison for booking under edict number 364 of the Broadcasting Act of 1963. And it's a long drive to that prison, baby. Just you and me. No witnesses.
Okay, have fun, buddy. All right.
Nah, I don't like that.
Well, try just putting even if it takes a hair more time, putting a little bit more of a wry thing on correct.
Track 13.
This announcement from the producers of this record contains important information for radio program directors and is not for broadcast. The first cut on this record has been cross-format focused for airplay success. As you well know, a record must break on radio in order to actually provide a living for the artists involved. Up until now, you've had to make these record-breaking decisions on your own, relying only on perplexing intangibilities like taste and intuition. But now, there's a better way. The cut that follows is the product of newly developed compositional techniques based on state-of-the-art marketing analysis technology. This cut has been analytically designed to break on radio, and it will, sooner or later. For the station that breaks it first, the benefits are obvious. You lead the pack. Yes, no matter what share of this crazy market you do business in, no other release is going to satisfy your corporation's current idea of good radio like this one. On this cut, we're working together on the same wavelength in scientific harmony. But remember, this cut is constructed for multi-market breaking now. Don't waste valuable research with needless delay. We've done the hard work of ensuring your success. The final step is up to you. Special designer song follows in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Mr. Tommy, are you set up to perform here this summer right here at Kitties by any chance?
Not the Kitties, but the 7th Street Park. We're going to be activating that.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
What about, he's in Georgia now. What about that space?
Are you Kylie, I just talked to
yeah,
him.
Yeah, is he going to, you going to do the dance?
We just had a beautiful poetry project
this weekend. I saw that.
So lovely. So lovely. A lot of good poets from the city came up. Live music. There was some dance. There was a flute.
There was some reading.
A reading.
Where was this?
Baba Yaga.
Baba Yaga.
Gallery.
Out there in 9G, folks.
Yeah.
A little...
Is that 9G? That ain't 9G.
Yeah, this is live.
Oh, shit.
Were you nervous?
No, but I...
Baba Yaga is 9G?
Yeah.
Right by Stewart's
by
is not
Stewart's.
9G.
Stewart's is our bathroom.
It's 9G.
Is it?
I wouldn't make that up.
I thought that was just the 3rd Street.
No. I think you're both right.
Both right.
Okay.
And there is
third
Enki.
Third into nine.
Let's give a plug for Enki's store.
Enki Ballor.
Enki Ballor.
She had a piece in the show this weekend that was beautiful.
Ah.
I really want to be there. Arby and I got like weird food poisoning.
Oh no.
Weird food poisoning.
Night. Oh no.
What's like not weird food poisoning?
I didn't like it.
The allergies, this snow, I don't know what this is, but somebody take it with them. It is terrible.
Oh, yeah.
I've been medicated and everything. Look at you.
My little Benadryl.
Little pill popper.
Oh, my God. Easy pop. Yeah. Tommy D. And we got some, there's some music happening.
Down there?
No, me and Rager and our friend Johnny Garcia from Pasadena are in a band now.
What? Hello.
We have like almost 30 tracks.
Get out of here.
And we might be releasing very soon.
That's what's up.
As in an album?
Yeah, like a mate, like
that you could buy.
Maybe it's shared okay, freely.
Maybe free.
Yeah,
maybe
something.
It's just free.
Rager's performing next week over there at Basilica. You gonna join her? Maybe.
Oh, she is. Jupiter Knight. Yes.
Not the
I will
band.
Be there.
You will be
not
there.
The
not
band.
The band.
I think she's doing a solo.
Okay.
A solo set.
Rager, friend of the show, aka Rebecca Bohr.
Rebecca Bohr.
The fact
there
that she's changed her name Rebecca to Rager
Ruth.
As a Scorpio baby.
She's the original
I'm
Rager.
Feeling it. I'm feeling
she's
it.
She's original.
She likes to rave and rage and all the things the kids
rage,
do.
But
Rager.
She's also, yeah.
What's your sign?
Rager Cancer.
I got that.
Coming
Tommy.
Up. Hi, Tommy.
Oh, sorry.
Cool. Nice to meet you. Dante.
Dante, nice to meet you.
He's a fellow dancer.
I was telling
dancer.
Someone about that yesterday. Because there's just like the tension
at Hudson Dance Festival last year.
Remember? Like,
a couple years ago.
Okay.
If the tension wasn't taught like we did, it would have took the audience member off. Remember how we ran? It was beautiful. That's
yeah.
what I loved the most. I was like, that was live.
Yeah.
It was on the edge.
Yeah.
It went another direction.
Totally.
So fast.
Totally.
That.
And the Basilica show where we almost died too.
Oh my God.
That was
oh,
great.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that what happened to all dance places? It was like a little bit of we almost died that
day. I don't want to make that promise for this weekend.
Because I know with DJing, a DJ can save your life, but I didn't know dancing
could be so. let's hear the details here. How did you almost lose your life dancing?
Yeah. Tommy D.
Take it easy. That's Tommy Boy.
Tommy Boy.
Oh, yeah, that was a thrilling show. It was a live orchestra. You know, we got carried away.
Sounds
we
like
were,
it.
We were climbing up these ropes that
Ooh.
We were
part
Is of
it the
costumes.
Rope that they use for the, for like that rope exercise thing that women or people do sometimes?
It was actually, Enki created these. They
oh.
were like part of our costumes, but, you know, 40 feet long. And then
wow.
Tommy and I just went crazy. We were hanging from the thing and swinging around. And
oh boy.
We watched the photos afterwards. And we were like, wow, we could have died. But we were feeling it.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Former Vice President Mike Pence officially launched his presidential bid on Tuesday and will make a formal announcement Wednesday in Iowa. South Carolina Senator Tim Scott and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis have already entered the race. Former President Donald Trump still leads in public opinion polls. DeSantis is seen as his biggest rival.
Given the severity and complexity of the allegations contained within this record, Congress must investigate further. Americans have lost trust in the FBI's ability to enforce the law impartially and demand answers, transparency, and accountability.
House Oversight and Reform Committee Chair James Comer announced contempt of Congress hearings will begin Thursday against Federal Bureau of Investigations Director Chris Wray. Comer said this stems from Wray's failure to produce certain documents the committee requested in its investigation of Hunter Biden and allegations President Joe Biden was involved in a bribery scheme when he was vice president. Wallowa is the latest Oregon county to vote to join in favor of becoming part of Idaho by literally moving the border. A dozen Oregon counties have voted to secede from the state in the last 3 years. Rural Oregon native Rosalind Mock says people in these areas want to be part of the decision-making process. She thinks urban Oregonians can play a significant role in healing the state's divides.
Knowing that understanding and respecting one another doesn't mean we always have to agree with each other, but knowing our rural and urban neighbors makes it really hard to divide us.
FBI data finds American Jewish people are the victims of 63% of reported religiously motivated hate crimes, and the Biden administration recently unveiled a new plan to combat rising anti-Semitism. The new plan aims to heighten safety and security for Jewish communities and reverse the normalization of anti-Semitism and Jewish discrimination by increasing awareness and education. Myra Clark Siegel with the American Jewish Committee says this plan is a major step in the right direction.
This strategy includes more than 200 policy proposals with 100 plus action steps for the federal government across its branches and entities. And I think that that really reflects the importance of all of society dealing with this kind of hatred.
The Michigan chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations filed a lawsuit against the Kent County Sheriff's Office for forcing a woman to remove her hijab in a booking photo. The lawsuit claims the sheriff's office violated the religious rights of 21-year-old Jana Haig from Grand Rapids by asking her to take two booking photos, one with and one without her hijab. Amy Ducare, an attorney with the council, says the two booking photo policy is unnecessary, adding removal of the hijab in front of non-related men is highly offensive to practicing Muslim women.
Policies are set by the jail or the institution and not necessarily through a state law. I don't believe that there's any laws in any states that protect a woman's right to wear the hijab explicitly.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In May, the MIT Election Data and Science Lab released its survey of the performance of American elections for the 2022 midterms. A majority of both in-person and mail-in voters expressed satisfaction with the voting process, but how voters voted shifted again from 2020 to 2022. MIT surveyed 200 voters in each state and D.C. on methods of voting, problems encountered, confidence that votes were counted, election security, and reasons for not voting. Compared with 2020, confidence that the voters' vote counted as intended went up in 2022, particularly among Republicans. Of those who voted in person on Election Day, 68% were very confident, with 24% somewhat confident. Interestingly, of those who voted by mail, 73% were very confident and 21% somewhat confident. In-person voting on Election Day 2022 rebounded 19% from 2020 to 50% of voters, while voting by mail dropped to 31%. The percentage of early in-person voting, while down from 2020's pandemic voting, continues to climb over time, reaching 18% in 2022. Among those who didn't vote in the midterm, 12.1% cited not knowing enough about the candidates, 11.7% because they weren't interested, and 9.8% because they were too busy. Find the link to the full report at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Next up on WGXC is from the 2023 album River Said from New Zealand's Maxine Funk. This is Willow White.
Trifle early as the spring, wisp of willow whispering, the nun's blithe prayer still roaming like a thief. Over hills her darkest hour, over hills her dream quakes. A trifle early is the spring, wonderful oh wandering, milkmen running through the town like a seer. Over hills the darkest power, over hills the darkest power, the nightgown saints the dawn makes. Glass bottles over glass bottles sing, so earthy is the spring. Glass bottles over glass bottles sing, so earthy is the spring.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
With state legislators scheduled to end their session this Thursday, Senator Pete Harkin and Assemblymember Deborah Glick, chair of the Environmental Committees, held a press conference on Monday, June 5th, to urge passage of their recently rewritten Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act. The legislation would reduce packaging by half over the next 12 years, ban certain toxic chemicals from being used for packaging, and prohibit so-called chemical recycling from being counted as recycling. We hear from Senator Harkin, Assemblymember Glick, Adrian Esposito of Citizens Campaign for the Environment, Judith Enke of Beyond Plastics, and Bobby Wilden of Clean and Healthy New York.
We are here today to announce the apron of the infamous, now infamous, Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act. First of all, this is a really important day that we're all here standing together, because it's no secret that in past years there have been different philosophies about what this bill should look like. A couple of overriding concerns. Number one, our municipalities are drowning in waste, and it's costing our taxpayers and our municipalities hundreds of millions of dollars that can be better spent on teachers, on firefighters, on social workers, on so many other public things. Second, climate change, the methane and carbon created by our whole waste system, it's imperative that we reduce. And finally, because of the toxins in packaging and the amount of packaging, single-use packaging, plastic packaging we're creating, we're drowning in plastic. So those were the three overriding things.
Next is Assemblymember Deborah Glick.
We believe in shared responsibility. This should not be just the responsibility. Our friends in industry take some responsibility for the waste that they generate in our homes. So I don't think this is a radical notion. We have other industry-specific, quote, extended producer responsibility. This isn't really the first crack out of the box. And this is perhaps a broader one that reaches into more areas, but we have set the stage for this kind of shared responsibility for materials that go out into the world and need to be in some way recycled or dealt with in some other fashion. So we think that this is a great step forward for New York, and I give great credit to all of our friends in the advocacy world who had not just, you got to get this done, but we said, here's a problem, and they talked with us, and we talked with folks in industry, and we came up with what I believe is actually a very solid product that will, in fact, meet the needs of our environment. Remember, we produce almost 7 tons of waste in New York, and it's got to go somewhere. And landfills are being capped around the state, and we need to be sure that we are dealing more effectively with the way in which we, so many of us, generate waste. And this is about sharing that responsibility. So I am pleased to introduce Adrian Esposito.
Thank you so much. The truth is that manufacturers and producers have been dumping their trash across Long Island for decades. And it's time for manufacturers to take out their own trash. And that's exactly what this bill does. It accomplishes 4 important waste goals. 1, it financially incentivizes reducing plastic and packaging waste. 2, it also incentivizes using more recyclable material in packaging. 3, it reduces toxic chemicals in packaging. And 4, it encourages reusable, such as refillable and reusable packaging products. All across New York State, we've worked with municipalities, whether it's New York City, the Coalition of Towns, the Coalition of Counties, and they're all telling us that solid waste is a quiet crisis that's growing. And that crisis has to do with what to do with our waste in the long term. The recycling market fluctuates, the waste is increasing, and the cost is rising. The only thing everyone agrees on is reducing that waste, and that's what this bill does. It is time to stop kicking the recyclable can down the road and pass this bill this year, this week, to give New York State residents tax relief, less solid waste, and a cleaner, safer, more sustainable future.
Thanks, Adrian. Good afternoon. I'm Judith Hank. I'm the president of Beyond Plastics and former EPA regional administrator. We are turning our rivers and our ocean into a watery landfill of plastic material. This is a water quality issue. This is an environmental justice issue. I work closely with community groups in Louisiana and Texas that are literally dying from the pollution from the petrochemical industry and plastics facility. We need to reduce the demand for plastics. And plastics are not really recyclable. It's about a 5 to 6% recycling rate for plastics. So if you don't reduce it, it usually ends up at a landfill or a garbage incinerator. And if you burn plastic, you get small amounts of dioxin emissions. Those incinerators are in places like Peekskill, Newark, New Jersey, Poughkeepsie, often environmental justice areas throughout Long Island. I think an essential component of the bill is the part of the bill that reduces toxics in packaging. It starts out with 18 highly toxic chemicals. Who knew that there were PFAS chemicals in packaging? Mercury, lead, formaldehyde. I would love to talk to anyone about why it's good to have those sorts of toxins in our consumer packaging. We are concerned about microplastics, 5 millimeters or less. Microplastics have been found in the Great Lakes, in the ocean, in seafood, in beer, you might be interested in that, in honey, in our human bodies, in blood, in breast milk, and in the human placenta. Our babies are being born pre-polluted with microplastics. This bill is commensurate to the problem we are trying to solve. I want to emphasize that this is a transition period. The all-important waste reduction provisions for plastic packaging, it's 10% in year 3, 20% in year 5, 30% in year 8, 40% in year 10. Recycling requirement, the final requirement of 75% recyclable, kicks in 2050. I don't know if I'll still be around in 2050. This is a very reasonable transition. Final point. I work with a lot of young people. I teach at the college level. They are cynical about politics. And I discuss with them all the time why public service is important, why legislators like the ones here today are truly public servants. This is a real problem with a real solution. This is workable. Young people care about climate change. They care about plastic pollution in the ocean. If they see the New York State Legislature adopt this bill this week, it will restore their faith in government. They want to see action on climate change in this issue.
Pleased to introduce my friend Bobby Wilding.
The executive director at Clean and Healthy. We are focused on building a just and healthy world where toxic chemicals are simply unthinkable. This bill is critical to achieving those goals. What we need is a just, non-toxic, and circular economy, and it's time to change. Packaging is a critical component of that, to do that right now. But we also know that the ingredients that are in packaging that are restricted in this bill impact the people who use them every day. Particularly in food packaging, we know that those packaging chemicals transfer out into our food. We know that people are being exposed as they're handling the materials. It is essential that we make sure that the materials that are cycling through our economy over and over and over again, and we agree that that zero waste goal is essential to our collective survival, those materials have to be benign. The restrictions on the kinds of definitions of recycling are also essential. And we're really excited about clarity that we have that so-called chemical recycling is not actually recycling. It's simply a mechanism that allows us to be reliant on the poisonous fossil fuels that have been generating.
This has been Mark Dunley for Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
You might remember, even like 9 months ago, there were Republican state-level leaders who were taking matters into their own hands in terms of some increased movement at the U.S.-Mexico border and just moving people around the United States. There was the very high-publicized story of Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida, pulling a political stunt and flying people up to Martha's Vineyard. And there have been directions of buses and and other modes of transport of folks from the border zone to New York. Some of that has been politically motivated, like literally politicians using people as political currency, which is a deeply problematic thread in all of this. But then immigrants come to New York City for all kinds of reasons, including our reputation for really being the portal of the whole conversation in across the United States about the country being a nation of immigrants, right? It all starts in New York City. A lot of the voluntary migration to the United States starts right there in New York City. So, you know, there are push and pull factors, just like there are in any kind of migration story. What's happening right now in upstate New York in particular is that the shelter system in New York City, which is where New York City decided to house recently arrived immigrants and asylum seekers, that situation became untenable, unsustainable. What we're hearing from our partners in New York City is that they lack the capacity in their shelter system to be able to accommodate more people. Now, there are a lot of other choices that New York City could have made in terms of figuring out how to safely resettle folks. But, you know, my job isn't down there. My job is up here. So I'll speak to what I know. And that is that New York City, and it's been pretty well publicized, without a lot of coordination or communication, has hired a private contractor to move people to places upstate that are deemed to be safe and welcoming based on what public officials have put on the record. Unfortunately, in Albany, one of the things that happened was that they sent the first group of people specifically to an area that we said was not welcoming based on what we knew about the Republican leadership in Colony. So that really started everything off on the wrong foot in terms of being able to trust that New York City was being intentional, deliberate, and thoughtful about where they were sending people. The other tricky thing is that there doesn't appear to be a lot of vetting, so we're just having to sort of reinvent the wheel. You know, I've said that people arrived on Ellis Island fleeing World War II with more personal information than these folks are arriving with in terms of like organized personal information in order to access services. We haven't gotten anything. We haven't gotten manifests that say like, here are the people, here's where they're from. Sometimes we get like country of origin and some languages that are spoken in the group, and that's about it. So, you know, it's like a manufactured crisis. It doesn't have to be this way. We're New York. We can do it better. But, you know, Albany County and Albany City are working their hardest to support our efforts in making sure that we don't, you know, for example, lose people to labor trafficking, or that these folks who have now, their locations have been spread far and wide in the news, aren't taken advantage of.
We recently, in Albany specifically, had a decent-sized influx of Afghani refugees that were settled here, and it seems like relatively efficient and free of backlash. So how is this different?
That's a really fascinating question that demands a lot of soul-searching. The Afghan evacuees, that was an intentional U.S. federal action, right? You know, it was done through the military. There were protocols. There were military bases set up to serve these folks. And then there was high-level communication between the White House and the military and, you know, humanitarian groups. And they were paroled into the United States. They were not asylum seekers. And what that means is that they get employment authorization, the document that you need to be able to work in the United States lawfully if you're not a lawful permanent resident, a green card holder, or a United States citizen. They got access to those employment authorization documents or work permits pretty quickly. Asylum seekers have to wait a long time before they can even apply for a work permit. So the folks that are coming into the area right now don't have permission to work. And for many of them, legally, they don't have a basis to apply for permission to work. And I don't think that anybody in New York City understood the impact of that, because a lot of these folks were told that they could get jobs if they came up here. And that's just deeply problematic. It's not true. People can get jobs, but they'll be working without work permits, which exposes folks to a lot of unsafe labor practices, including below market wages.
Are asylum seekers new? There's so much talk about asylum seekers, and it's not just that we suddenly started having people seeking asylum here, right?
No, my very first case that I ever represented as a law student was an asylum seeker from the Republic of Congo. And it's still one of the most horrific cases of torture that I've ever encountered, and I've handled literally like hundreds of asylum cases since then. So asylum law is not new, and it wasn't new when I started either. It springs from the Refugee Convention, and I think that's where things get confusing between refugees and asylees as well, because it all springs from the same international agreements after World War II. So like, there's a lot of overlap in terms of the definition of asylum and refugee, but the big difference is refugees are not in the country, and they are designated by the United States government through international cooperation as refugees, and they're like labeled that, and then they come into the United States, and they are immediately eligible for a whole bunch of services and benefits like employment authorization. Asylum is a claim based in a similar legal standard, but with additional complications, right, that you can make at a port of entry or when you're within the interior of the United States. That's when you can claim asylum. And it is a lawful way to enter the country. It is a lawful protection to claim. It is a lawful path to permanency and citizenship, ultimately. The Trump administration and other detractors and exclusionist folks have done a good job of making asylum seekers seem like undesirable people. But I'll tell you that a lot of the people that are seeking asylum, including in this group that we have in Albany, are like middle to upper class people with really sophisticated higher education degrees. And that's specifically why they've been targeted, or there's like an aspect about their identity. Like there are people, it's Pride Month. There are people in the LGBTQIA plus community who can't exist as themselves in their country, or they will be subjected to stoning on account of their sexual orientation or identity. So like, It's really frustrating because we do this thing, this mental gymnastics where we say, okay, well, these people are worthy because they're fleeing war and we are bringing them here under like military and official guidance. These other people are also fleeing a whole panoply of dangers, similar levels of threat, like immediate threat to their safety and well-being. Maybe it's not the Taliban, but it's that level of aggression. And for reasons I'm still struggling to understand that are rooted in systemic racism and are intersectional with our hate of lots of other groups, we stigmatize these folks. And I'm not going to say that refugees end up unscathed by this hateful rhetoric either. It's not like, I'm not trying to say that one group suffers more than the other. But there are just different benefits afforded to different groups, and that affects the perception that people in this country have of these newcomers. This is a real opportunity. It's an opportunity for all of us. People are pouring out of the woodwork to help. I see a lot of hope in this moment, and that's what I'm holding on to as we work through this day after day.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Heather Bellow reports for the Berkshire Eagle that commissioners of the Great Barrington Fire District Water Department said they are going to take one more look to find a second source of drinking water for the town. At their annual meeting last month, the Great Barrington Fire District Water Department said they can't find a second water source. They could buy an ultraviolet disinfection system to help reduce chlorine use and guard against pathogens entering the water from the shallow Green River source. Great Barrington has used the Green River as a water source since 1930s. But the Great Barrington Fire District Water Department has long searched for a second, deeper source of water less prone to bacterial contamination as a backup if the main system fails. The department is currently drilling for water in a marshy area to the east of town off State Street. The department also approved a $2.2 million merger of the Housatonic and Great Barrington water systems to give Great Barrington two more days of stored water. That should cost residents 25 cents per 1,000 gallons of water. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle. Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that three of the last four 19th congressional district representatives are lobbying for a bill that would allow the adult children of service members to stay on their parents' health insurance until age 26. Current 18th Congressional District Representative Pat Ryan, a Democrat, and Republican Representative Mark Molinaro, and former Representative Chris Gibson, also a Republican, were in Socrates on June 3rd, saying the bill would create fairness between insurance coverage for military families and the rest of Americans who have been able to stay on their parents' insurance until 26 since the passage of the Affordable Care Act in 2010. Ryan called the disparity between coverage for armed services families and civilian families, and I quote, a grave injustice, end quote, and said the kids of soldiers, and I quote, really, really bear a tremendous burden, end quote. He asked, and I quote, if we can't solve something like this, what are we doing, end quote. Molinaro, the current 19th Congressional District Representative, said the bill, and I quote, will expand health care coverage for military families who have made tremendous sacrifices in protection of our nation, freedoms, and way of life, end quote. Gibson said his 21-year-old son was kicked off his plan when he graduated college early, and he said that the current structure of the law did not, and I quote, incentivize productivity, end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Mid-Hudson News reports about the story of one migrant who was recently bused to the Hudson Valley by politicians elsewhere. Abraham, speaking French to an English interpreter, says he is a Mauritanian native who wanted to escape the corruption and danger there. His journey took him through El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, and Mexico, then New York City, and then bused to the town of Newburgh with dozens of others in two hotels. On the way, he told the translator, and I quote, people would take out guns and try to harass you and try to rob you. He said he had a friend who actually died on the way, and on the way there are a lot of dead bodies, people who are dead in the forest, just trying to make their way there, end quote. Abraham is trying to get asylum in September, then get a job and assimilate into American culture. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grand. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
The Biden administration has unveiled a plan to combat the rise in anti-Semitism across the U.S. In New York, Anti-Defamation League data finds incidents of hate against Jewish people increased 39% between 2021 and 2022. The new plan aims to increase safety and security for Jewish communities and increase awareness and education about anti-Semitism. Given how necessary this is, Myra Clark Siegel with the American Jewish Committee describes why something like this hasn't been created before.
It is not a small undertaking to bring the federal government together to marshal the resources across 40 different government agencies, which is what this plan does.
And I think that there is a real recognition to do something.
She adds, once the policies and provisions of the plan are launched, any shortcomings or additional areas needing to be addressed will become apparent. A report from the American Jewish Committee finds 38% of Jewish people changed their behavior out of fear of anti-Semitism in 2022. But 91% of non-Jewish Americans understand anti-Semitism is a serious problem that affects everyone, including Jewish people. One pillar of the plan is to reverse the normalization of anti-Semitism and anti-Jewish discrimination. Along with a flurry of anti-Semitism awareness campaigns across numerous federal agencies, this includes adopting the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's working definition of anti-Semitism. But Clark Siegel notes there's a wrinkle to using it.
It's a working definition. It's not legally binding. It's instead a definition so that we understand what anti-Semitism is, and then we can develop the tools and the resources to address it.
She adds municipalities and states can adopt this working definition to build on their anti-Semitism plans. She adds municipalities and states can adopt this working definition to build on their anti-Semitism plans. In 2022, Governor Kathy Hochul signed a package of hate crime prevention legislation. Along with this, funding was allocated to community-based organizations for them to strengthen safety measures and protect people against hate crimes. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And now, here is your WGXE weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, a chance of showers with thunderstorms also possible after noon. Otherwise, it will be mostly sunny with the temperature high near 73 degrees. Tuesday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms before 8 p.m. Then a slight chance of showers. It will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 49 degrees. And on Wednesday, a chance of showers, partly sunny with a temperature high near 69 degrees. And on Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, with a temperature low of around 49 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
We got a caller on the air. I believe Garrett Roach is still with us right now online waiting to join. Garrett, can you hear me?
Garrett Roach is here and can hear you loud and crystal clear. Sure as they're alive.
Amazing. Garrett, how are you today?
I am receiving some feedback, echoing my own voice back to me in the phone, but are you able to hear me all right?
I think folks can hear you. I'm pretty much able to hear you. So just do the best to speak clearly and tell us perfect. What you got.
Of course, that's it. Well, I am top of the universe, my friend. Thank you. A few recent updates, and it just keeps getting better, at least on my end of things. A couple of birthdays, for one thing, I'd like to say my great-grandfather, John Joseph, also known as Jack Roach, of Knocknagosto County, Kerry. His birthday was May 28th, and he was just an astounding, astounding figure in my mother's life when she was a little girl. He was born in 1872 and passed in 1963, and she had a vivid memory like a steel trap and passed so many stories down to me about him. He passed away just shy of her 9th birthday in June 1963. And then we have the birthday of Severa Drabsik, May 31st, and she called your show one time. She's a dear pen pal of mine from now Boonesboro, Maryland.
Okay.
And he was also very, very loyal to my mom, Maggie Rose, before she passed as well. So Severa's out there, and we're in touch full force still.
As well, thank you, Severa, for listening in.
As much as she possibly is able to be, because she's studying to become an astrophysicist. Next on the list of updates is, you are going to love this one, Kieran, is on this past Saturday, which was June 3rd, I was invited to attend, along with Rob Dellis, Rob around the county, my near and dear friend, our first ever, or Rob had attended a few years ago, I believe, but it was my first Native American powwow over in Margaretville, New York, in Delaware County. I was invited by, here's a shout out to Felicia and her daughter Tara. They are of the Blackfoot tribe, and they are regular singers at the Half Moon Karaoke here in Hudson.
No kidding.
The powwow was an astounding time, very, very moving. And there was actually a lady there who knows you. Her name is, I believe her first name was Lori, her last name is Pritchard, and her husband was Evan Pritchard, and they had a stand there selling maps that showed New York City and New York State, you know, back to the 1600s, before it was New York, so to speak.
No kidding. That is an unbelievable small world. I'm so glad you made it there to an indigenous event over there in way